Hello and welcome back. I'm JT Raymond, one of the hosts of the Jag Bros, coming off a massive 37-20 victory for the Jaguars this afternoon over the Indianapolis Colts. I'm JT Raymond alongside my brothers Joey and Jack. Huge win. We're recording this a little bit earlier in the week, considering it is a shortened week with our Thursday game against the Saints. But man, it feels great. Three straight wins for the Jaguars.
I said it's great to be a Jacksonville Jaguar fan right now. Oh my goodness, it feels good.
Win, win, win. Three wins in a row. Love what Doug Peterson said after the game. He told his team that we are just scratching the surface. This team looks really good.
We're not just scratching the surface. We brought out the broom and we just swept the Colts out of here. Dominated them in the AFC South.
Good teams lose a game after going back-to-back wins in London. Great teams find a way to keep that momentum, bring it back to the States, and have a dominant victory against the Colts. Well, we're excited today to be able to dive into some of our topics that we typically cover as we break down the previous game. We're going to do something a little bit different. We're actually going to start with the defensive side of the ball, considering how dominant they did play for most of that game. Then we'll go to the offensive breakdown. We'll talk about coaching and special teams, as well as some initial highlights. But before we dive into some of those things, Joey, are there some game balls to hand out?
Oh, yeah, we got a couple game balls on the offense, defense, and special teams this week. I'll go ahead, and I'm going to give my first game ball to a special teams player, Jamal Agnew, with the awesome return kickoff to flip the field and help put the nail in the coffin to end the game. The offense kind of needed that little jolt just to finish it off. Great job from Agnew.
Yeah, the Colts were coming back at that time. They brought it within two scores. You felt like Jacksonville's offense wasn't able to do a whole lot. And then immediately Jamal Agnew was able to put us in a great position to ultimately kick a field goal. But it really felt like it was a little bit of a death nail to the Colts at that time. I think my game ball goes to ETN. Played an awesome game. I think the run where he scored in one play right after the turnover in the second quarter was an amazing run, being able to get out to the outside, make a couple guys miss, and then walk into the end zone. He didn't have the most efficient day with 18 carries for 55 yards, but those two touchdowns went a long way, and always great to see ETN getting into the end zone, considering that was an area where he really struggled at in 2022.
Absolutely. And I'm going to go with the play right in the middle. And so I'm going to hand my game ball to Josh Allen, because that was a crazy sequence of the Jaguars are down 3-0. And in the manner of less than 30 seconds on the game clock, all of a sudden the Jaguars are up 14-3, which was especially huge considering the style that the Colts wanted to play, which was slow, dink and dunk, control the ball. That first drive, they really had the ball for more than 15 plays. They ran out more than half of the first quarter. And once Josh Allen gets that strip sack, sets that play up for ETN to run the ball in and forces the Colts to play from behind the entire game, that really changed the narrative of the entire game. And the Jaguars really never looked back. That was a massive strip sack. So game ball from me goes to the one and only Josh Allen.
And speaking of defense, that is the side of the ball that we're going to start on first. So Jacksonville was able to force another game with multiple turnovers. We actually had four turnovers this game, three picks on Gardner Minshew, who coming into this game has been very careful with the ball. And so we forced those four turnovers. We're now leading the league in turnovers with forcing 15 in the first six games. So averaging a little over 2.2 or so turnovers per game. Absolutely incredible. We saw three sacks as well, and we were able to hold the Colts, who had been offensively doing pretty well and up until this point. And we were able to solidify a 31-6 lead before they started tacking on a couple of touchdowns there in the second half. Guys, where should we go first with how good this defense played?
Let's start here. I was listening to Josh Allen after the game, and he was talking about how Coach Caldwell challenged the defense to hold this running attack to under 50 yards running, which anytime you can do that is incredible, especially when the Colts have built their offense around the run. Their starting quarterback, Anthony Richardson, is out. So you know that they want to run the ball. They were just coming off a massive game against the Titans where they ran for more than 200 yards. Zach Moss has a monster game. And what do the Jaguars do? They completely shut down the Colts running attack, keeping them to, yes, under 50 yards. My key in the game was actually just for them to keep it under 120 yards rushing. And the Jaguars just stonewalled Jonathan Taylor. They stonewalled Moss. They shut down the run completely. And so that really forced Gardner Minshew to throw a ton. Anytime you're having Minshew throw more than 50 times, you know that's going to go well for the defense.
Yeah, and I told y'all in the last episode, the Minshew magic is not real. Try to mention that beforehand, but it also looked like maybe he is still a Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback because he couldn't stop throwing it to the teal. If Devin Lloyd could actually catch with his cast on, we would have had 6 to 7 picks on Gardner Minshew. And then also, JT, you said our secondary stunk. Pretty sure they're very good and that they've found their whole identity. It's just taking the ball away, and I love it.
Yeah, no, the secondary is playing at an elite level as far as turnovers. And look, from a statistical perspective, it's still not great because you had Gardner Minshew throw for 330 yards, as well as their leading receiver go for 100 yards again against us with Michael Pittman for nine receptions for 109 yards. So, like, I don't want to say that, hey, our secondary is perfect, but if you're forcing turnovers at the rate that you are, I think that's massive. And so there's a theory out there that turnovers are often a luck-driven metric. And I kind of understand that argument, but at the same time, you see some of these teams year over year forcing an above average amount of turnovers. There has to be something to do with whether it's the defensive coordinator goading specific plays, whether that's we play a lot of zones that oftentimes will offer us opportunities for more interceptions. We're goading a pass. We're recognizing tendencies. And so if we're jumping routes, you're going to see a little bit more boom bust from a secondary perspective. And as long as you're hitting on those boom plays like we are, that's massive. I mean, Darius Williams and Cisco both now have 3 interceptions for the year, which is right up there at the top, depending on how the rest of this weekend plays out. You have both those guys playing at Pro Bowl levels, and you're seeing a defense that is bowing up at important times and giving our offense the chance to score with more possessions.
And that's the big thing, was how clutch this defense has been, again, in this game against the Colts and the last several games. That Cisco interception was a clutch moment where, again, the Colts are driving. They're starting to finally get some momentum. And there's a few times where they felt like, okay, we maybe have to worry a little bit. And then the defense would come up with a huge player. Joey, you gave the shout out to Agnew, who had a huge play as soon as the Colts got a little momentum. And then the Williams interception, talk about back-to-back-to-back interceptions. 3 straight games, 3 straight interceptions for Williams. He picks it off on a 4th-and-goal play, throw into the end zone, where if the Colts make that play, this could be a completely different ball game. So the defense has been clutch.
Definitely. And then also to mention JT and those yardage, a lot of that came because Tyson Campbell ended up getting injured, and we had Monterrick Brown in there, and he got burnt. A handful of times, and a lot of those extra yardage came from him and then them picking on him. I think they're going to need to change that up. He does not need to be starting if Campbell can't go for the Saints game.
Yeah, his play was very concerning in the second half. It looked like they were specifically targeting whoever he was covering play after play after play. And while the Saints aren't a great offense, and we'll break it down more in our next episode, I can tell you what, they saw the same thing we saw, and they will be targeting him as well. Unfortunately, Campbell had a hamstring injury, I believe, which the soft tissue injuries usually linger. No official reports. I feel like he'd be doubtful to play Thursday. Most likely may not even play again until after the bye here in a couple of weeks. So that is a concern for the secondary. And I think part of the reason why I'm a little bit lower on the secondary, at least I have been this season is because of how elite the front seven is playing, especially in stopping the run. I mean, we are now in top three categories against the run in just about every single significant statistic in that respect. Aluakon played another outstanding game with double-digit tackles, and Lloyd stepped in and probably played his best game as a pro, dating back to maybe the first game when he had that anomaly, and I think he was player of the week, his very first game as a rookie. I thought he played outstanding at linebacker as well.
You're right, JT. Devin Lloyd played really well today. I mentioned him a little earlier. If he didn't have that cast on, I think he could have had at least two, maybe three picks. He just seemed to be everywhere where the ball was. And had a really great game. But man, oh man, I just want to bring up once again the Campbell injury. That fall off of, if we lose one of those secondary guys, that's a big fall off. And I think there's another fall off just like that. You know, knock on wood, if one of our edge guys ever got injured, that fall off would be a massive fall off as well. So this defense, it's playing elite, but it doesn't have so much in the second backups. So we need to keep them healthy.
What are you talking about, Joe? Did you miss incredible highlight sack from Chaseon with Gardner Minshew falling over and Chaseon still barely getting the sack?
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, if you read my tweet, I said he finally brought him down after he had a few tries at that sack. It was like Gardner Minshew was asking to be sacked. He kept like shaking Chaseon off, but finally brought him down. And good for Chaseon. He's gotten two sacks, the most he's ever gotten in a season. Very happy to see him back on the board at least.
Yeah, three sacks, a half sack for Walker and Roy Robertson-Harrison split one. And then obviously Josh Allen had the sack fumble. Josh Allen is continuing to solidify himself as a top end defensive end. Like you were saying at the beginning of the year, Joey, you were dead right on that. And I was saying he was more average, slightly above average. And he has not played like that. He's certainly been on the high end. Look, Walker is not the pass rusher we want him to be, but he is certainly establishing a very strong run-stopping ability. He's holding the edge well. Our defensive line, Roy Robertson-Harris and Fadakasi, are both playing well, stopping the defensive line. And then I thought Smoot had a couple of nice plays. I think he helped blow up a third and short earlier in the game. And while he's probably not getting the snaps that he will in a few weeks, it's nice to see him out there and his name called a couple of times.
Absolutely. I felt like that was big to get Smoot back and to get Devin Lloyd back. That definitely was a boost to our defense because both those guys had big plays on that first drive, holding them to a field goal. And here's a crazy stat. As you look at the last three games of just how dominant the Jaguars defense have been, especially in the first half. So if you look at the Falcons game, they shut out the Falcons in the first half and get two turnovers. In the Bills game, they limit Josh Allen and the Bills to only 7 points in the first half. And then in this game against the Colts, they limit them to 6 points and cause two turnovers. So the first half defense for the Jaguars has been the top of the entire league. They have been that scary good in the first half.
They've been very good in the first half. And I got to give the credit to that front seven, as JT says, they've really kind of chokehold the run. And I mean, the Colts pride themselves on being a run offense and they abandoned the run early, just paid Jonathan Taylor, Zach Moss coming off of a monster game. And they only handed it off.
Yeah, they had 15 attempts in Zach Moss and Taylor combined for only 40 yards rushing. And this is after Zach Moss had over 160 yards against the Titans, who prior to that game had been the best run defense for the last year and a half. And so really impressive play. You would have thought you would have seen. And a lot of run defense too is heart and will and keeping your focus and making sure that you have good gap control. And those are the type of things that you could theoretically see slip coming off of a travel trip from London. If you're not focused, a little jet lagged or any of those type of things. And that none of those showed up on the game this Sunday.
No. Yeah. I mean, you could tell they had Gardner Minshew throw the ball 55 times. That's insane. That's how much they abandoned the run because they just couldn't get it going.
That's crazy that Minshew would throw 55 times. And I think once again, in each of these last three podcasts after the Jaguars win, I think we need to give a big shout out and a big tip of the cap to Coach Caldwell calling another beautiful defensive masterpiece where each time they have completely shut off what the offense wants to do. They've completely thrown the offense out of rhythm. Clearly from the first drive, what did the Colts want to do? They wanted to do these little 3-yard throws. They wanted to do these quick runs. They wanted to do screens. And all of a sudden, the Jaguars defense shut down the run and forced Minshew to throw the ball 55 times. And Joey, I loved your point. I saw this on social media too, that, hey, maybe Gardner Minshew is still secretly a double agent, because you can go look at his Twitter account right now and it still says that he is the quarterback for the Jaguars. So maybe that's the reason why he threw a career high interceptions of 3 interceptions and had a fumble. And he was, to your point, Joey, he was trying to get a couple more interceptions for us too.
Oh yeah, it's just really nice to throw to that teal jersey. I think he just kind of forgot what team he was on.
The defense had a ton of incredible plays, again, having 4 turnovers, leading the league now in turnovers. But let's look at the offensive side of the ball, which played really well overall too. Anytime you can score 37 points against an NFL defense is very, very good. But I do think there were still a few things that the Jaguars offense left on the board, certainly in the second half. And so as you look at the overall offensive performance, what were some things that jumped out to you about the Jaguars offense?
I wanted to start off with the Jaguars offense and give them some praise. This was, I believe, the first time that they went down on the first drive and scored. And we needed it, because watching the Colts on their first drive eat up all that clock and dink and dunk their way down the field and score some points, I was a little worried. I was like, are we going to be able to stop them? But the offense went out and had themselves also a long drive, kept the defense off the field, let them rest up, and also put 7 on the board instead of 3. It was awesome to see them start off fast like that.
Yeah, that was one of the keys to the game for me, is being able to start out fast. And the fact that we go touchdown, touchdown on our first 2 drives, it got the Colts out of the game plan that they wanted to employ, and it got us in a situation where we could be a little bit more comfortable. However, if I look at just the stat sheet, the fact that we only had 233 yards offensively and we somehow generated 37 points, I feel like you'd be hard pressed to find too many teams that only get less than 240 yards and somehow can put up 37 points. You're not going to see that to happen. So there's certainly worth it, some areas that we can dive in a little bit deeper and talk about where the concerns were on the offensive side of the ball as well.
Yeah, that's a good point, JT, because you look at the box score, and even watching the game, it's pretty amazing that you're just a few points away from dropping 40 on this Colts defense. And I wouldn't say any of our offensive playmakers had standout games. I would agree with what you said earlier, JT. I really liked what I saw from ETN. I think he's putting up for sure his best year of the season, still continues to be in the top 5 category for running yards, and he's getting more touchdowns. But other than ETN, none of the other guys had a banner game. None of them were bad. I don't think any of our playmakers had bad games by any stretch. But when you're talking about scoring that many points, again, a lot of that credit has to go to the defense.
Yeah, I mean, you look at some of our scoring drives. You had -9 yards that resulted in 3 points. You had 6 yards that resulted in 3 points. You had 14 yards that resulted in 3 points and 22 yards. So just those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 drives right there, you have a total of 45 yards, and somehow you've scored 16 points. You just don't see that happen very frequently in the NFL.
Well, I do want to give a shout out to you, Joey, because this is a guy that I've harped on throughout the podcast, but he came up with some big catches and a very nice touchdown grab. And that is Brenton Strange catching his first career NFL touchdown. So that was pretty awesome to see.
Yeah, he definitely had a little more playing time, it looked like, this game. And he played well. Really liked what I saw. Looks good for the future. He did have one false start, but you know, that's still kind of a rookie thing, kind of working his way out. No, really liked what I saw from Strange.
And technically, he has more touchdowns right now than Ingram, who I think is having a very good year. So that's crazy that Ingram still has yet to have a touchdown for the Jags.
Man, I don't know what it is. Trevor either goes blind with Evan Ingram in the red zone or what, but he just doesn't see him. But luckily, he saw Britton Strange. He was wide open right there on the goal line. And it was nice to see also a touchdown pass that wasn't right on a toe-tapping edge play. One where it was just an easy touchdown pass.
That's a great point. And this is why I think our tight ends need to be more involved in the red zone, because ideally you should have some more openings where tight ends can kind of slip through the defense, or just being big targets can take up some more room and get some more touchdowns. So I love seeing our tight ends. Even though I want Ingram more involved, it was great to see Strange catch his first career touchdown. Big shout out to you.
We had a lot of great plays on offense. There were some times where it looked like it was clicking and it was moving, but we had 14 drives offensively. 11 of those drives were 5 plays or less. What was it that you felt like we couldn't actually get the ball rolling? So many times we're seeing us get 8, 10, 12 play drives that sometimes will end in a field goal, but it never felt like we could get in gear. What do you guys contribute that to?
I contribute that to a little bit of situational football. At that time, we were already up so much that I don't think that we were running our normal offense type deal. And to that, I also wanted to point out that in the second half, we're up by so much. I thought we were throwing it way too much in the second half. It was time to start running out the clock, but yet we're going 3 and out, and we threw the ball. So we didn't take like any time off the clock. It just felt like the offense kind of got a little disjointed when we were up so much, and they didn't know what to do. They didn't know whether they should put their foot on the gas and throw it deep, or should they just do dink and dunks and run the clock, or should they run the ball? Like, it just felt like they didn't quite know how to handle being up so much.
Yeah, I think it was what we saw here in this game for the offense was more of a regression, specifically on third down, where the Jaguars in the Bills game were very effective on third down, going more than 50% conversion. And the nice thing to see in this Colts game was we were more effective at third and short. I love the little play where we had Tank Bigsby in as fullback early on in the first quarter. That seemed to work well. And so we did a little bit better at third and shorts. But overall, we were not very good on third down. I think we ended up finishing somewhere around four out of 13 conversion. And so that's what's going to kill a lot of drives, is when you can't capture those third down conversions. And so that seems to be when our offense struggles, a lot of it comes back to third down conversion.
Yeah, I hear what you guys are saying, and I think there's elements of truth to that, right? Hey, we couldn't continue to move the sticks, and the fact that we were not really calling a great game plan, in your opinion, in the second half. I think a lot of it has to come down to the offensive line, especially when we saw guys who we haven't really been thrilled about how they played this year, but when they went injured, for example, when Sheriff went down, the offensive line actually got even worse. I mean, when third and one feels like it's a 50-50 chance to actually get it on the ground, and when you feel like every time Trevor is dropping back, he's having to run for his life and make a hero play, it eventually catches up to you. And that's the pessimistic way to look at the second half, I would say.
Yeah, you're right, JT. There was some bad offensive line, obviously, play again. You're looking at some third and two plays, and they're trying to get the ball on the outside, doing some sweep runs, and it's just a free-for-all. Like, the offensive line didn't even decide to block them, and we're losing like 4 or 5 yards on the sweep play because the defensive line's already in the backfield before he almost even gets the ball to him.
And this whole thing culminates into the last play that we see Trevor out on the field. He actually gets up limping and gimpy. I'm not sure that we're recording this Sunday evening, so we don't have any information. We don't know if it was a knee, an ankle, how bad it was. Trevor was able to walk into the locker room after the game with a little bit of a limp, but he did not come out to do the final kneel downs in victory formation. And so a play where you're already up multiple scores, and as soon as he says hike, he's getting run down by about four guys.
That was an ugly play. Of it did feel like every Colts guy was in the backfield. Something you hated to see because the game was won. The Jaguars are up significantly. There's only about 3+ minutes on the clock. And so that is the last possible thing that you would want as a Jacksonville Jaguar, is for Trevor Lawrence to take a hard hit and potentially now be battling with an injury. Again, as you point out at the beginning, JT, the Jaguars have a short week, so he really only has a couple of days to get ready, potentially, depending on how serious this injury is, for the Thursday night game against the Saints, which would be huge to go in and get four wins in a row. And so that play was definitely a picture of the offensive line struggles of letting everybody through, and a 15-plus yard sack, and your star quarterback getting hurt.
It reminded me of the Remember the Titans and the line, push them, pull them, do something, because they're just letting them run free and willy out there at Trevor Lawrence. I mean, get in their face, protect the person that you care about. This is your quarterback. There needs to be some sort of pride thing that no one touches my quarterback. And if you do, then I'm going to get in your face and I'm going to growl. I'm going to do something. Like, go get them. Have some pride, offensive line. Protect Trevor Lawrence. Protect the running backs. Do your job.
So I think the big question we have to ask, I'm going to open it up to y'all, because this is what everybody is talking about right now. And of course, hindsight is 20/20. But was that the wrong play call for the Jaguars in that situation?
100%. I believe that if you were going to throw it with Trevor Lawrence, you needed him in shotgun and just have him kind of do a little short pass to try to get the first down. There was no reason to have him under center, do a play action rollout pass that is going to put him in jeopardy. Give him some space, just put him in shotgun and run that play. There's no reason to make it more risky for him, especially when we're up.
Yeah, the play action on 3rd and 7, I kind of get it, because there's 3 minutes left. You're thinking, okay, even a field goal puts you up 3 possessions, or they're calling a timeout. It pretty much ices the game regardless. But if you're going to pass, I don't know. I feel like it's just the worst case scenario of what actually happened. I don't necessarily hate the play call. It's at least defensible, but just watching the game and feeling it, it felt like we were going to pass it. And it just was a really slow developing play, because not only is it a play action, but it was a play action where he turns his back, and by the time he's looking around, it's a naked bootleg and the guy is breathing down his neck.
Yeah, I mean, I understand what you're saying, JT, on maybe they'll run it, but you could see that the Colts were bringing an all-out blitz. They didn't care. Like, the only way they could ever get back in this game is if they first force a turnover or had some sort of big play. They weren't going for the guarding the run or anything. They're just full-out blitz, see what we can get. And in that situation, you just got to protect your quarterback. Don't put him in that situation.
Yeah, I think it was the wrong call. And probably all of us are, of course, calling that because of what happened to Trevor. But I also think it was probably the wrong call. But I don't think it was an egregious call. Look, this was no University of Miami where they should have kneeled the ball and then they fumble and you lose the game because you didn't kneel the ball. It was not that egregious, but it's certainly going to be really, really painful if Trevor is not able to bounce back pretty quickly. At this moment, again, we're recording Sunday night, and really the only comments from Trevor says he feels pretty good. He's never had a knee injury before, so I don't know if that's good or bad. And so he's like, I don't know necessarily what to compare it to. But of course, Jaguars fans, this is going to be our number one storyline going into the Saints, is watching, what does Trevor look like? Is he going to be 100% healthy? Is he going to be able to go Thursday night against the Saints?
So if this was the wrong call, what would you like him to do? Run or just no play action?
Well, that's why I said I'd rather have him in the shotgun, where he has at least a little couple yards back, and then you can make a play there. You can either run it or throw it or do a like read option-esque type play. And honestly, we may not have this conversation if Trevor Lawrence doesn't start to lose his cleat. It looked like maybe if he had his cleats on all the way, he might have gotten out of there and had enough speed to get away. But unfortunately, it looked like his cleat started to come off. His foot slowed him down, and he was able to get brought down. So, I mean, it's hindsight 2020. You know, everyone's going to call it a bad play because it didn't work. But if it did work, then everyone would have been praising him. So, I mean, it's hard to say, but it's just a more dangerous play that I don't like them running when you're up that much.
I don't even think it was a dangerous play. Again, it's a play that if they bit on the run, it probably works out pretty well. You get a first down and you're probably kneeing out the game from there. So I don't know. I didn't have necessarily a huge problem with the play. It was a slow developing play and it's just kind of worst case scenario of the result. But I don't know. I wouldn't necessarily camp on there and say that was a terrible play call or a questionable play call even.
100%. And so we're just going to continue to track Trevor Lawrence's progress. Wait to hear. Most likely we'll hear some more details on Monday. And so be on the lookout for that. I did want to give on a positive note to the offense again. How about that one-handed grab by Evan Engram on the sideline? That was an incredible catch. Go up. If you missed that play, go up and just search it. Look it up. That was an awesome catch by Evan Engram.
He's been a star, and he's been that clutch guy for Trevor Lawrence. He is really showing the Giants up. They should have never let him go. He does not have a hands problem, obviously. He's catching everything. I'm super impressed and very happy he's on our team.
Yeah, so offensively, if you score 37 points, you feel like it was an A-plus type of game. But it felt like while the production was an A, it seemed like it was more of like a C-plus type game from this offense. So there's room for continued improvement. And hey, we got a 17-point victory against one of our big rivals who we were actually tied with going into this game. So nice game by the offense, incredible game by the defense, which I think brings us to special teams and coaching.
We will get into special teams. I think you're being a little harsh on the offense. I thought they played very well in the first half and then had some stumbles in the second half. I would have given them a B, right on a B minus B, just because the first half was really good. They scored 21 points in the second quarter. So, I mean, they didn't do anything wrong on offense there.
For sure. And so if you give the defense, which we're probably all going to give them an A, you also have to give the Jaguars special teams an A because they had some big plays as well. Joey, you called out the Agnew return and how much of a momentum builder that was, a momentum shifter of taking away any momentum that the Colts had gotten from probably their best drive of the game to now the Jaguars are already in field goal position from that return. And speaking of field goals, McManus was phenomenal. He was 3 for 3, and all three of those field goals were right around 50 yards, with one of them being just over 50 yards and two of them being, I believe, 48 and 49 yards. And so 3 for 3, he was very good. He has been worth every nickel in that trade. We definitely won that trade. And so he has been very, very good for the Jaguars.
A machine. I don't know if you actually watch him after he makes the field goal. There's no emotion on his face. He acts like that was the easiest field goal he's ever done. It's pretty incredible. You know, you kind of watch other kickers, you see them make it and they freak out or have that kind of celebration. Not Brandon McManus. He's just like another day in the office. This was just a simple old putt chip. They aren't that simple of shots, as you said. One was 48 yards, one was 49, and the other one was 51. Those would have been really difficult for Riley Patterson last year, but for him, no problem.
Don't sleep on the fact that you have a guy who's got a monster leg that you feel comfortable with kicking every time around the 50-yard line, because there was plenty of times last year where we were forced to make some difficult decisions, because while Riley Patterson was fairly accurate inside of 45 yards, he didn't have the strongest leg. So you really didn't feel very comfortable every time he was lining up over 50. But now if it's fourth and seven at our 35, or excuse me, inside the 35, hey, let's line up and kick a 52-yard field goal, because we feel very confident that McManus has that leg.
Yeah, I mean, I'm almost confident enough to pull him out for a 60-yarder. It seems like he's got plenty of room on these kicks to push it back even further.
Yeah, and just to give a little bit of love to a guy that probably doesn't get a whole lot, our punter had a pretty solid game, and he's had a good season overall for us, and that's Cook. He had four punts, averaging over 50 yards, which is really good. It was, of course, boosted by having a 62-yard punt, and then he did have one inside the 20. And so I feel like this was a game where Doug Peterson, Coach Peterson, loves to say, hey, go win in all three phases. And that's what the Jaguars did, and that's why you're looking at a Jaguars 37-20 victory, where I feel like the score doesn't even do it justice. Of we blew out the Colts. They crept back a little bit towards the end, but this was a game where the Jaguars overall dominated Indianapolis.
Yeah, what's kind of crazy is we just beat probably the toughest team in our division by double digits twice, and yet some of our fans and other people aren't quite happy with these victories. We won by 10 last game, and then this game we win by even more. And we're still like, oh, it wasn't good enough.
Don't sleep on the Texans. I think they might actually be our toughest competition. And now, a few weeks removed, that was way less of a disaster of a game and more of a realization that Houston could absolutely still win this division. So you're going to need to pay attention to what they're doing, because they're playing really good football on both sides of the ball right now.
No, yeah, Houston is definitely a team that we need to keep our eyes on and make sure that we go get them when we play them in Houston. But you don't hate the Colts. They were 3-2 going into this game, same as us, and we put it on them. So don't discount this win. Go out there, celebrate it just like you celebrated the Buffalo's win. Like, this is still a very good victory, and revel in it. It's okay to enjoy these victories. Don't get so upset, Jags fans. Be happy. I remember when our best player was the punter, and that's all we could talk about, was because no one else was good on this team, and so all we talked about was Logan Cook. Now we barely even mention him because there's so many good players on this team and we're having multiple victories. Revel in these victories. Be happy that you have a really good team to watch. I am so, so proud to be a Jags fan.
That's a good point. And this was a big victory in a lot of ways. Number one, you beat Indianapolis 9 straight times at home. And so you extend that streak, which just plays into Indy's head even more as we'll take them on in the future of, hey, we're always going to beat you. We're always going to own you in Duval. We're always going to lock down the bank against you guys. And then number two is that you took the outright lead in the AFC South. You have the complete tiebreaker against the Colts if they are able to make any sort of comeback. And I agree with you, JT. I think the Texans right now are the team to watch in the AFC South. They had a nice victory against the Saints. CJ Stroud is playing for sure at Offensive Rookie of the Year status right now. And so as you look across the AFC South, as you look across the AFC, in our division, I think you're watching out, looking out for the Texans. And then across the AFC, when it comes to playoff position and home field advantage, you're watching out for these same teams that we keep highlighting, which is the Chiefs and the Dolphins and anyone else.
And the Bengals seem to be making their return now that they've got Joe Burrow seeming to be a little bit better. They're starting to come back, so we need to watch out for them.
Yeah, and you have to mention the Bills too, obviously.
We own the Bills. We don't have to worry about them no more.
Well, they still have to play other teams that they tend to own. Although right now they're losing to the Giants. Maybe they struggle against teams in New York that are not the Bills.
I did see on Twitter someone say that the Jaguars broke the Bills. So we'll see how that game plays out, but it's not looking good.
They had a lot of injuries coming back from London. And I know there's a lot of Bills fans that are very nervous about their game, but yeah, Josh Allen 126 right now against the Giants. Yuck.
Yeah, and honestly, I'm super happy that we got away with this victory because we just saw this week the 49ers and Eagles both lost to a Browns team without Deshaun Watson, and then the Eagles lost to the Jets.
Yeah, they lost. Both those teams were playing backup quarterbacks. Of course, Aaron Rodgers went out the first play, but technically Zach Wilson is still a backup quarterback. And so a lot to watch in the NFL. And as we've said earlier, this is going to be a shorter week for the Jaguars. I love what Cisco said in his interview of the coaching staff has had them prepared even last week of knowing, hey, we're going to play two games in 10 days. Their strategy, their game planning is fully set up to go in Thursday night football. National TV is a big game and to take on the Saints in New Orleans. And so we are going to release our preview episode a little bit earlier. So be sure to, number one, subscribe, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, wherever. If you subscribe, you'll get an automatic notification. And so make sure you hit subscribe to our podcast so you'll get that next preview episode. And then, hey, do us a big favor as well. Go ahead and hit 5 stars and share a review of what you are excited for this Jaguars team, what you love about this podcast. And we will be sure to give you a special shout out, read your review right here on the podcast. But know that we are fired up for this Jaguars team. All we do is win, 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 3 wins in a row. Let's go make it 4 on Thursday. From all the Jag Bros,
Duval.